During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stan Weber is with us via phone this morning. Hello, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Good Friday to you.
Stan, we have lots of questions to ask you. Let's start with, sometimes I want to ask you, hey, did you watch the football game last night? And I know the answer is yes. Do you find it funny, like me, that Denver thought their quarterback situation was good enough to pass on Justin Fields and Mac Jones? Because I think it's funny. Do you?
Well, yeah, absolutely, because, you know, there's as much fun in sports rooting against the teams you're competing with, your rivals, your division foes, as there is rooting for your team. I don't know why that is. Maybe because there's three of them that you get to root against, so there's always something to keep your mind focused on when your team only plays once a week or if they have a bye game. But, yeah, absolutely. Anytime you can laugh at things that happen with the Broncos, the Chargers, the Raiders is high-level enjoyment for me.
I mean, if you're the Broncos, you're 3-3. You're at least still entertaining the possibility that you could be a wild card team. You go into Cleveland and you get to play them with no Baker Mayfield. Their offensive line is not at full strength. They're down to their third string running back. Decimated by injury, and you have sold yourself to the public as we have a great defense. We have all these weapons, and we just needed a guy like Teddy Bridgewater to bring it all together. And you can't beat Case Keenum and running backs that people have never heard of.
Yes, and I think the thing that you need to highlight there in your discussion was you got a head coach who I don't think really is head coach material.
That's right.
But is a defensive coordinator material, right? I mean, that's what you should believe that he's going to be good at. And you believe that the defense is going to carry them through in your equation more than the quarterback situation. You know, the defense is going to get it done. And, you know, I know next year is the 50th anniversary of something really, really big. Next year is the 50th anniversary of the undefeated Miami Dolphins in 1972 that had more than one running back with over 1,000 yards. And they just ran the ball at you anytime they wanted. And I thought they were on the field last night. I thought Larry Zonka snuck into the game at the end because the Broncos' offense gave it a shot in the second half, okay? A couple of good drives, red zone conversions. You say, okay, all you need is a stop. And the Browns, are they really going to rely on Case Keenum? Well, yeah, they threw some, but still, in the NFL, if they're going to run the ball and you know they're going to run, you ought to be able to stop them sometime with at least more than 30 seconds, maybe more than a minute left in the game. And you have a chance to go down and win the game in Cleveland when it didn't look good for most of the game. And instead, they ran the ball every down right at them whenever they wanted to. Once they crossed the 50, they ran out the whole clock, and it was easy. And even after a penalty to stop the clock,
that's right,
moved them back, they still made the first down easily. And you're going, this is an embarrassment. I mean, the Broncos' defense was an embarrassment. Unless that was a 72 Dolphins that slipped in there for the last hurrah, this should never happen in the NFL. The Chiefs are getting ready to go against the bad, bad dude of all time in Henry. And even he, when you know he's going to run the ball, oftentimes can't make 10 yards in three plays. I mean, he'll bust a 50-yarder and he'll stiff-arm you for 8 or 15. He gets his yards, but they don't always come, you know, 5-5-5 first down. The Browns just took the game away at the end, took the heart out of Denver's defense and head coach. That was funny.
So here's something that I wanted to share with you, Stan, because of your love of football. I thought you'd get a kick out of this. Somebody tweeted this out last night, and it was a screenshot of a message that D'Ernest Johnson, the running back that ran for almost 150 yards last night for Cleveland, a message he sent out to every – remember the AAF – remember that league? He sent this to every AAF team in 2018 asking for a tryout. So this is the message he sent to everyone, and it was he was sliding into their DMs on Instagram and sending these teams messages on Instagram and social media. Here's the message. Hi, my name is D'Ernest Johnson. I'm the former running back for the University of South Florida. After finishing college at USF, I attended a training camp with the New Orleans Saints, where I have since been a free agent. I am very interested in becoming a part of the Alliance League and would love the chance to send in my highlight videos for you all to view. Thank you. So because he messaged all the teams, he ends up making the Orlando squad, did really, really well, and then found his way back to an opportunity in the NFL. And then last night, 22 carries, 146 yards, and a touchdown on Thursday Night Football. How great is that?
It is great, and it was such legitimate yardage. You know, it wasn't up to, by two touchdowns. It had a 28 or 45-yard run at the end to really scoop your running total up. This was game-on-the-line plays where he got 6 and 7 yards every time. And it was amazing. You know, you just look at the riches that they had in the running back room for the Cleveland Browns, because the other two guys ahead of them, Chubb and Hunt, are unbelievably good, very featured guys. You know, in our top 10 list of running backs, they probably would fall in there, both of them. And now you're down to your third team guy with your backup quarterback, and it all just goes fine. There's no doubt where they're going to give the ball. Credit the offensive line and the blocking unit. My buddies might be listening. Okay, guys, I need to block well. It's really important, but we're going to give a little love to this running back too, because it was amazing just watching them. You know, the old 4-minute drill, run out the clock at the end of the game. With all those backups, Cleveland just went out and did it. And they ended the game basically with the first down. Because if they needed to make another first down, they would have done it. And it wouldn't have taken 3 plays. It was only taking 2 plays to bust 10 yards consistently. And I just kept thinking, well, I guess Denver's happy they got a first down. You know, when it got to the 40, then the 45 going in, then the 35. And I just kept saying, well, at least they make a first down quick. And the Broncos might be able to put 3 plays together, and it just never happened. So it was incredible performance by the Browns to stay alive, because they are a good team, and they were really on the skids that they would have lost the home game to Denver. For Chiefs fans, I don't think we need to worry about the Browns. They're not in our division, so let's focus on our division and be glad that the Denver defense now has an extra few days to realize they're not that good. I mean, what the heck? I'm not saying they're bad, but How can they have any confidence when they got the ball run down their throat in a critical time on a Thursday night game with the whole NFL watching?
Well, that, and Stan, that's one of the parts of the sport of football to me that the math doesn't do a proper job of illustrating, is how demoralizing it is to have the ball run down your throat.
It killed their will.
Yeah.
I mean, their body language was horrible as that was happening to them.
I can speak to this just because of my time in 7th and 8th grade on the St. Peter's Cathedral football team, coached by your former center, Andy Harding. Stan, we were a very undersized team, and the other teams would just run.
You.
I know. So surprising to see. I was the safety on that team, and when the other team just runs it right at you and there's nothing you can do about it, like you can stack the box, you can put everybody in there, but the other guys are just bigger and stronger than you. It is so demoralizing, it's hard to describe. And like when you put it in those terms that the Broncos then got to sit and think about that for over a week, that takes a toll on a team, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's called breaking your will back in the day. Now we cut people up with a passing game. And it's 7-on-7, and hey, I love it. I've always thought football was a skill game and didn't get quite as caught up in all the physicality. But can you guys just imagine for a moment Mr. Tim Grunhart about ready to be a Kansas City Chief Hall of Famer and honoree on the wall of the Arrowhead Stadium? Can you imagine, like, if he came in the office and you said, okay, you're going to have to go up with him. For 3 seconds, we're going to let him block you. So he blows you back into the wall or wherever. Then he walks back quietly, stands there for 15, 20 seconds and comes back and you have to do it again. And you're just like, really? Just think about bang, bang. If it's, even it's Andy Harding. I mean, Andy Harding's a good player. He's no Tim Grunhart, right? But those guys just quietly walk back to the huddle. They don't have to talk trash. The great linemen didn't talk trash. They just blew you up, walked back like a robot, and came back and did it again. And you're just, I mean, it is demoralizing because suddenly, especially those little guys like you back at the safety position, sometimes they go, I did nothing wrong. I mean, I'm watching a football game and we're losing and I'd like to help, but they blew a hole open and they ran 6 yards before I could even get there. And you just look around and say, big guys up front or linebackers, can someone make a play? And you almost, you know, dissect the team and get guys going, well, I'm not losing this game. They're not passing on me. I mean, it just, it tears at your will. It's an old-fashioned style. It is not modern football, because why wouldn't you throw it? Teams throw it even in critical situations where you're supposed to run the clock down. Even the Browns threw the ball a couple of times. But that was old school. I mean, that was Marty Schottenheimer saying, it's 4 minutes left in the game, boys. Run it right down their throat. They're not touching the ball yet today. It's game over. And the guys would go out, and the John Alts and the Tim Grunharts and Will Shields and those guys would go out and do it. And that's what we saw last night, except for we saw it with no names. You know, some no-name linemen playing for the Browns, backs, Keenan as quarterback. It was impressive for the Browns, but it was super demoralizing for the Broncos. In a game where they had a real chance to win, they could have stole that game at the end.
We have Stan Weber on the line. Stan, let's get into talking about the Chiefs. And I bring this up because I was looking through this draft last night, and the only reason I bring this up is because, of course, you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I found this to be interesting. In the 2016 draft, when the Cowboys took Zeke Elliott, number 4 overall, and let it be noted they also got Dak Prescott in the 4th round, but they took Zeke Elliott, number 4 overall. Do you know who the next running back was taken after Zeke Elliott in that draft?
No, I don't. That's a great question. I do not know.
They took Zeke Elliott, number 4 overall, and then the next running back was number 45 overall, Derrick Henry.
Wow, because that's the first time ever. Boy, you're dropping some knowledge here. That's the first time ever since even before that draft that I could have said the Cowboys should have taken someone else, right? I mean, they could have taken Derrick Henry. And because I saw Ezekiel Elliott out of the St. Louis area, originally committed to Mizzou. I think both of his parents went to Mizzou. Going to Ohio State, put the national championship trophy up for Ohio State, just took the team on his back. Number shown, remember that? When they ran through, they shouldn't even have been part of the college football playoff. That was your TCU, and made it, and they won a national championship. And I was saying, the Cowboys, I hope you draft Ezekiel Elliott. That is the guy I wanted when we went to the pre-draft thought process. It's like, that is the one player I want. Even now, when you want to get quarterback all the time, I thought Ezekiel Elliott was the real deal, and I have no problem with thinking he is a great attribute to the Cowboys. For those that think that Pollard's better, Pollard's more explosive, Pollard gets more yards, but he couldn't do it down after down. He couldn't take the hits. He'd start fumbling, he'd start getting injured. He's the spark that comes in after all the tough work is done. Ezekiel Elliott is killing it, doing a good job. Now, last year he got fat and was not as motivated, got too many nose rings, those kind of things.
Wow.
Right now he's more focused. He's lighter. He can do everything. I love Ezekiel Elliott. I love the pick. I love that he's been a Cowboy. They probably overpaid him, but I thought it was okay. You put doubt in my mind for the first time, and the Cowboys are 5-1 right now. So it's hard for me to put a lot of doubt unless you talk about their defense, and I can create a lot of doubt fast. But let's just be positive for a second. I thought you were going to mention Stephon Diggs' brother, you know, playing like a wide receiver in a defensive backfield, breaking records for interceptions for the Cowboys. That's the one, you know, good point that they have, and Parsons. But no, that is unbelievable. So Derrick Henry was in the same draft. The Cowboys missed out on Derrick Henry.
I could also tell you that they took Jalen Smith, number 34 overall, and then Chris Jones went number 37, and Xavier Howard number 38. But that's not important. The point is, like Derrick Henry, I mean, it wasn't just the Cowboys. The Cowboys went running back and took Zeke, but then nobody else went running back, and he fell all the way to number 45. And now, I mean, you guys tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, I think he's recognized as the best running back of his era. He's one of the few running backs that's had a 2,000-yard season. He's put up unbelievable numbers. I have no idea how long he's going to last. Longevity is certainly going to be an issue. But for right now, I mean, he's to me the best running back in football, and he's what the Chiefs have to stop on Sunday. It's just – it's crazy if you look at how physically gifted he is. And even though there are plenty of teams that are resistant to drafting a running back in the first round, dude fell all the way to 45, and teams passed on him multiple times. There were teams out there like, nope, nope. And he's, I mean, I don't know. Like, do you remember, Stan, what you thought of Derrick Henry coming out of Alabama? Did you, I know you talked about Zeke Elliott, but I mean, clearly he's surpassed anyone's expectations, and he's incredible.
Yeah, you know, no, I didn't. And it's one of the things that happens to me, and it wouldn't happen to a draft expert who gets down to the tape and studies every player. I don't have time to do that. More focused on the locals, watch some of the national stuff, kind of get an opinion about the overall team, but not the individuals. And Nick Saban's done this to me. You know, Alabama's just rolling through there all the time. And you know, like Tua, how great's Tua? You know, because he's a quarterback, I studied him a little bit more, and I said, I don't think he's a real deal. But Mac Jones, how good is he? I mean, the teams are so great. They have NFL talent all over the field and the backup as well. You just trying to just say it's another Alabama player. It's another Alabama player. So I did that way too much back then. But now, when you look at him, number one, I'm going to say I love his attitude. He's not only a great running back, he just seems like a great guy with a great team attitude. And I just give him all the props in the world. But I just keep thinking, as you talk about it, I mentioned Tim Grunhard, you know, blowing people off the ball. If Tim Grunhard was there walking down the hall and you guys were ready to talk to him or get blocked by him in my example, just think if Derrick Henry walked next to him, and Derrick Henry's probably bigger. I mean, Derrick Henry is a giant. It's like Shaq walking around. When Shaq walks around, you know, if you didn't know he was 7 feet tall, if you just had him in a picture with no humans around, his body proportion is just like a normal person, except for he's 7 foot one. Right? I mean, it's just unbelievable. And that's why when you look at Derrick Henry walk in and go, oh my gosh, he is bigger than the linebackers, the defensive ends, and really not that much smaller than many of the linemen. And then his body's cut perfectly, and he can run Tyreek Hill fast. Not maybe Tyreek Hill fast, but right there, did you see that he had the fastest running back run of the year?
Yeah.
The other day when he was cruising down the field? And I haven't heard what Tyreek's top speed was, but it was unbelievable. His stiff arm is great. His strength is great. But I just keep thinking, if he just wanted to retire, who would be better for a modeling career? I mean, the guy looks like he is a 6'1", 215-pound, sleek, mean, you know, dude that's just awesome, fast, and yet he's a giant with all those same proportions. It's amazing to me. When you see some of those, you know, stiff arms, or they stop the game and say, well, look how big he is, and you just forget that he's a giant. So he's very impressive. The thing that I will say, though, is you are able, if everybody hits their fits really well and early, he runs straight up. You can get at his legs and force him to take a 1 yard run or a 3 yard run. Does that make sense? He's not a back that slithers. Ezekiel is more likely to get 4 every time. Derrick is going to get 1 and then 10. And that's your hope for the Chiefs going into the game this week, is you just maybe, you know, on a 3rd and 4, Derrick Henry doesn't make first down every time. It's not that easy. Sometimes he turns a corner and stiff arms you and gets him, but sometimes you just get him in the backfield and there's nothing he could do. You know, a bunch of people are grabbing onto his legs. He doesn't have that slither unless he's really going to take off. When he plants his foot and sees a hole, he might go 60 yards on you. So if that makes sense, it's interesting. He should get his yards, but they may come in hunks of 10s, 20s, and 50s, and not 4s and 5s. And that's where you just hope he doesn't get first downs and you punt a few times, because that's what the defense needs to do, is just force a few punts. Don't let him run. The Chiefs will lose the game if on many of the 3rd and 4s they turn around and Derrick Henry makes 5 yards. If he does it every time, then you're not going to stop their offense. But he doesn't do that. He's not that kind of back. If you go back and look at his plays, there's a lot of short and then many long, medium long runs with him. So I kind of like that, unless it's away. Because, man, if he gets in the open field, he's like Tyreek Hill. There he goes.
So one of the things that Adam Kaplan pointed out to us is that the Titans, their scoring offense is not great in the first quarter. But then it gets better and better as the game goes on. And he implied kind of to go back to what we were talking about with the Browns and what you're talking about with Henry right now is he just starts to take your will away as the game goes on. And you keep taking those hits, and after a while he wears you down. What can the Chiefs do to try to counteract that or to be prepared to not so they're not worn down and they don't have their will taken away in the fourth quarter?
Well, it's a great question. And now you guys put your Andy Reid mindset on right now. We're talking about it's Friday. It's still a day of preparation mentally of how we're going to game plan. So let's act like we're the offensive staff for the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay, the answer to the Derrick Henry question, the way you just answered it, which is a very legitimate thing, you don't go into the defensive room and talk to Spags. You turn to your offensive guys and say, a lot of people are playing two safeties back, playing the umbrella coverage. A lot of teams are forcing us to take our time down the field. We're really trying to find ways to not have to do that all the time, to just not take what they give. We want to get some explosives. We want to move the ball, and we want to score. That's how we're going to win. We're the Chiefs. We're going to score. But do we all talk about, hey, maybe this is a game where we go ahead and really feature and talk to Patrick about loving the check down throws, give it to Travis, you know, get us 7 yards. We don't mind taking 2 downs to get a first down and getting, you know, it's 1st and 10, and 2 downs later we've only made 14 yards. Are we okay with that? It is maybe the best strategy to not let your guys get worn down, because one of the things about being worn down will be the heat and humidity. I don't know what the temperature is going to be like in Tennessee. That'll be one factor. But the other one is just number of plays. And if you limit the number of plays that Tennessee gets on offense, he's less likely to wear you down at the end of the game. And so it really comes back to, do we monitor our Chiefs offense and just matriculate down the field, as Hank Stram said, or do we just say, no, we got to go. If we got chances to score, let's just light the scoreboard up and we'll deal with the defense later. What way would you play it, guys? Because that's really the way you could handle that.
I'm scoring points. Put okay. pressure, just score points.
Yep.
You know, because the Chiefs still, even though the offense, and Travis Kelce said it yesterday, that he says, look, we have been clicking. We have been putting up yards and numbers. It's the self-inflicted wounds. It's the penalties. It's the turnovers. And I just like to see this team go out and just offensively have a clean game where they just dominate and not have these turnovers. Because I still feel like that could be mental as well. They got to get through that. And so, I mean, I just want them to put up as many points, take the big plays if they're there, and just be super aggressive, because I still think they need to get over that, and we need to see a game where they don't hand the football back to the opposing offense, because that was still even a problem last week, is turnovers. And so, yeah, I want to see them go out and kick ass, Stan.
Okay, I think it's a sound strategy. Nate, I'll give you a chance to answer here, but...
Come on, Nate!
Just to say that, you know, that is fine, and I think Andy Reid historically would look in the mirror and go, yeah, you know, I'm going to handle Derrick Henry. I don't care how many yards he gets and how many points they score. They're going to do it from behind because we're going to score and get ahead. And number two, we're going to outscore them. It's up to our offense to go win the game. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for Derrick Henry, and I don't have a good answer for not getting worn out in the second half. Let's don't get cute about this. Let's attack. You know, that's basically what you've chosen. That's fine. But the other option is out there, Nate.
Well, I think that some of it depends. I mean, I think that if the Titans decide to employ the same type of defensive strategy that other teams seem to be taking lately, which is, you know, play a two deep shell, don't let the Chiefs beat you deep, and try to just test Patrick Mahomes' patience and make him take all the underneath stuff all the way down the field. I think if you're the Chiefs, you just reinforce, fine, because we'll keep going on these 14-17 play drives, and that will keep our defense off the field. I don't think you have to force it. I don't think you just have to run the ball to try to have long drives to keep your defense off the field. I think you got to take the points wherever you can find them. But I think that it could play into the Chiefs' hands if the Titans play that way. As long as they stay patient enough, they'll still move the ball down the field and score, and they'll give their defense a little bit of a rest. Could be the best of both worlds.
You said one word I want to clarify there, because I did not make that distinction, and I want to make sure those out there, especially those analytic types, aren't making the distinction. You said it's okay to have the 10-play drives, 14-play drives. That's okay. Take what they'll give you and run the ball. I didn't say and run the ball.
Right.
Okay. I'm not leaning on the Chiefs running game at all. You run the ball sometimes, but you can still do all those things by the part where you said Mahomes checks down. Does that
right.
make sense? I never said run the ball.
Yes.
I said control the game with saying they're gonna dare us to play underneath and take the easy 5 and 10 yard plays, and it might be a game where we don't mind doing that.
Yep.
Because we're playing defense against Derrick Henry. But I don't want to see him handing off the ball too much and trying to run clock, because that's not going to work, and you're going to punt one or two times more than you wish you would have.
Yep.
You know, I'd rather have the ball, throwing the ball down the line to Hardman and let McColl run for 4 yards or 11. That's kind of part of the running game as well. So
yes.
You use that word run, and I go, wait a second. Let's make a distinction
on
that.
Yeah, and that's to clarify, that's what I meant, exactly what you're saying. You don't need to force the run game. I mean, yeah, run it some, keep them honest, all that, but you don't need to force the run game as an effort to, you know, stay on the field and keep the defense up. Just keep moving the ball. Just keep moving the ball down the field. We know that Patrick Mahomes is accurate enough, and they've got enough weapons. Spread the ball around. They just don't need to force shots down the field. If they're there, though, I also don't think they should walk away from them. I don't think they should be like, oh, hey, Tyreek Hill's wide open for a 30-yard pass. Let's check down because we want to keep the ball. You know, take the points where you can find them.
Keep scoring is a good answer, but the main one we didn't talk about and we all implied, don't turn over the football.
Yeah.
I've been high on the Chiefs a lot more than some other people that I talked to, especially you think about halftime of the Washington game. There weren't too many of my friends texting me about how great things were going for the Chiefs. And they didn't like my pregame analysis so much where I said, I think the Chiefs are going to be fine. I think the Chiefs are going to make a nice run at this part. They played a really hard part of the schedule. They're going to bounce back. Their defense is going to matriculate back toward the mean, toward being the 20th best defense in the league, middle of the pack. They're not going to be awful. And the Chiefs are not going to turn over the ball 4 times in some games and 3 in others. I just don't think that's going to happen game after game. Their answer was, no, the Chiefs are sloppy and they're not taking care of business and there's dumb penalties and it's not going to go away. And I'm just kind of the optimist saying, no, I think the turnovers are going to go away. You know, give me an average of 1 turnover a game for the next 5 or 6 games is what I think the Chiefs are going to do. I think the defense is going to play a little bit better because it can't be as bad as they played. It isn't the reality. They're not that bad. And they're in a run where they're going to win some games. And so I'm really optimistic in the middle part of the season that the Chiefs are going to make their run. And it was bonus coverage last Sunday, guys, that the Chargers took it in the jaw. You know, the division, we said the start of the year, Chiefs are going to win the division. Let's talk about everything else. Then we got a little more respect when the Chargers beat the Chiefs, and then the Chiefs lost to Buffalo the way they did. We got humbled around this town and started going, well, we're still going to make the playoffs, aren't we? And I've been saying, we're definitely going to make the playoffs. The way the AFC sits, there's no way the Chiefs aren't going to make the playoffs. But after last Sunday, I'm back to thinking, why not the division champion? Because it's hard to be good and everyone think you're good and then go out and perform. Justin Herbert, new head coach of the Chargers, they haven't been put under that pressure. And the first inkling that they got that, yeah, you guys might be the champs of the AFC West, they went out and put a dud out there. So I think the Chiefs have a real chance at winning the division and all of those things. But at halftime, my buddies weren't thinking that. I'm still optimistic on the Chiefs. I don't think they're going to turn it over that much. And I think that's implicit in what all the strategies we talked about is that you just don't turn over the football.
Stan Weber is our guest. Stan, we'll take a break and come back with another segment. Stan Weber joins the Border Patrol every Friday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stan Weber is our guest. Stan, Give us the score. What's going to happen on Sunday between the Chiefs and the Titans?
I think the Chiefs are going to score. So I'm going to go 34-30 Kansas City Chiefs in a win. And I got a question for you guys. I'm usually in studio with you, and we joke sometimes when we come off of a break and say, we just kept talking right on through. If you would have listened to us, it would be hopefully as fun as it is listening otherwise. But rarely do I get a chance to talk to Jake because I'm in the room with you guys.
How'd that go?
This time on the phone, I was on with Jake the whole time, and I was saying, Jake's a master. I wonder if he just taped that and has a podcast, or does he have his own little podcast? I know, Stephen, you're starting to podcast in addition to your role on Sports Radio 810 as the host of this show. But, you know, Jake and I had a good conversation about football there during that break. So I just wondered, is that going to be podcast? Does he have one? Or do we just have fun talking with ourselves?
He was a guest. He was the main guest of my last podcast. And heads are spinning all over Kansas City right now. And, Stan, I would invite you to download the latest episode of Hot Mike with SSJ.
Be careful, Stan.
Yes.
Don't have my grandkids in the car.
No, sir. But a lot of people are demanding more from Jake, and that will be, yes. How could we just take care of that in one episode? Like my father, that panel will happen again, Nate, Jake, and Lebo, where we discuss Jake's views on several things in this great big world of ours.
Correlation. I don't think it had any correlation with how Jake and I just talked for 5 minutes. Not near the same.
I hope that he didn't tell you some of the things he told us in the 5 minutes. Okay, so you've got 34-30. I have the Chiefs 38-30, so we're right there close, and so that makes me feel better.
Let's go ahead and do it 38-30 then. Yeah. I like that.
I feel it. I feel it in my bones. All right, let's move on to some college football. Kansas State going to Texas Tech. What do you expect down in Lubbock, Stan Weber?
Well, now that is a great question, because trying to figure out what you're going to expect from these two teams really gets you to the answer of who's going to be happy after the ball game's over. Texas Tech has put together some very high-level games this year. No one wants to give them credit for going to Houston and beating Houston when they were the underdog and everyone thought they were just going to, Matt Wells, the head coach, was going to get fired, and he's on the hot seat with a couple of losing records and really hasn't done some of the things that Chris Klieman has done at K-State, and they went on the road and won that game. Had a couple of easy home games and then went on the road, and no one seems to want to give them any credit for beating West Virginia on the road. You know, just controlling the game, leading 17-0 at the half, and then driving down at the end of the ball game to win with a field goal after West Virginia tied the game in the second half. Very impressive win. They're 5-2. They're playing with confidence. When you watch them play against Kansas, you may not be able to identify strengths and weaknesses as much because they just dominated the game. But as a player, their confidence level is high. So you're playing a team that believes in themselves. Texas Tech is a team that has a diversified offense, a true run-pass option. They really do run and throw on every play. They do a lot of wide receiver running game to stretch you on the edge with speed outside. And then defensively, they're all over the board. Against Texas in the strong running game and against TCU with the elite running backs that they have, Texas Tech's defense just struggled all day long and gave up running yards and tons of points. So if you can run the ball, if K-State can run the ball, that'll be a big key, then maybe you could turn it into more of the Texas and the TCU type games. And they play TCU at home, by the way, and they've lost 2-2 at home. So, you know, which version of Texas Tech do we get? If we get the best version of Texas Tech, if you watch the tape of their 7 games and see what they've done defensively and offensively, you're very impressed with what Texas Tech can do at their best. But their will can be broken. Back to that word. That's very old school. But their will can be broken. You create doubt. So it's almost double or nothing with Texas Tech. Control the ball, pass when you want to, down and score. You don't win necessarily your home games. You lose plenty of home games. You've never beaten K-State. They've always find a way to beat you guys in recent history. So here we go. Doubt, doubt, doubt. That's going to be a big key. Can K-State create that doubt? But if that doesn't come and you start looking at the better play of Texas Tech, if things start going well for them as the game unfolds, it's not going to be unusual for them to have things go well. They're 5-2, and they recently have won games at West Virginia, at Kansas, so they're dangerous in that aspect. K-State, you know, what are they? A team with a lot of doubt right now. And when they read social media and listen to the pundits speak about their program, everyone has doubts, where I say, okay, that's fine. You don't have momentum. Think about not winning your last three games. Think about having a week off. It's been over a month. And in football, that's like 2 years since they've had success and beat Nevada. So do they remember those good times? Do they deep down believe in themselves? The defense has struggled and given up a lot of completions, a high completion rate to Oklahoma and Iowa State. Games that they were competitive, but they got behind in. Where's the confidence come from, K-State? But if they do find some confidence, if they take a deep breath, I call it like being a golfer. The six holes that K-State played, the six games K-State played, are arguably as good a six-game schedule as anybody in the country's faced. With Stanford, they're underdog Nevada. In fact, they've been the underdog in four games, guys, and they've won three. So they're not that far off of where they'd be in a golf course that had easier holes coming up. But that's not football. So which team's going to really grasp the confidence? It's both there for both teams, but they both can question themselves enough to create the negativity to end up losing the game. One team might lose the game more than the other win the game by not believing in themselves for all 60 minutes. And so that's the thing I think to watch. Both teams are reasonably at risk of not deep down believing they're going to win that game if things don't go well.
All right, we just have a couple of minutes, and Jake is very anxious to get your answer to this. Gary Barnett just about had Jake talked into taking Iowa State and 7 points as they host undefeated Oklahoma State. So it's Oklahoma State at Iowa State, and Iowa State, Iowa State's favored by 7 points. Oklahoma State getting the 7 points, and so Gary Barnett had Jake talked into that. You got a team that's undefeated, that's getting a touchdown, going to Iowa State, and so who do you like here, Iowa State or Oklahoma State? It seems like Oklahoma State getting a touchdown is a pretty good pick.
Well, I think it should be a physical, defensive-led game, and that helps you when you're talking about those points. You know, the lower scoring it is, the more value each of those points have. So I have no problem if anyone wants to jump on the side of Mike Gundy. That team sets their jaw and meets whatever expectations they need. They'll play to the level of competition. They need to beat Texas, they go out and do it. They need to beat Boise State, they barely do it. They need to beat Tulsa, they barely do it. So Oklahoma State has the capability of being tough all day long. So it should be a pretty even game. There's no doubt about that. I have no problem picking Oklahoma State, especially when you get the points. But I want to say this to the people who are evaluating Iowa State. Forget about their loss to Iowa. They always lose to Iowa. They struggle sometimes in September. They let their guard down, and Baylor got outgained 2-1 by Iowa State, but still made a couple of big plays. Baylor's explosive. Iowa State didn't realize they were that good. They're licking their wounds after the Iowa game. They've erased all that. They've had a week off, and they've played two good games. Iowa State is much more the 10th to 15th ranked team in the country than anybody's given them credit for. They're the real deal. They're back to what they were last year and what you expected. I give Iowa State a slight advantage to win the game over OSU. I just think they're a little bit better on offense, and they're pretty equal on defense. Never going to cut down Mike Gundy's team. I think they're going to be all there all day, and they'll probably help you cover with those points. But I'm going to think, Jake, you're going to need those points because I think Iowa State is the better team.
So you see, Iowa State wins, but if you're Jake, you take Oklahoma State and a touchdown.
Yeah, because you got a 35 to 45% chance of OSU winning the game. You do, because they're two even teams who fight like crazy. And you get the extra points on there. You could cover your bet that way. I'm not a betting expert, but just trying to put my Jake head on and think like him for a second, I would say that sounds like a pretty good bet. But if you're just talking to me as, hey, how do you think the game's going to go down? You're going to listen to me and Danny tomorrow. Very short show tomorrow because KU kicks off at 11, so we only are going to be on from 9 to 9:30. So maybe I'll only have a chance to say it here. I think Iowa State slightly over Oklahoma State is my prediction in the game.
Stan, have a safe trip to Lubbock. Thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
See you on the TV next week, 6:30 a.m. I'm sorry I missed you guys in the studio the last couple of weeks, but it was a joy being able to talk to Jake while we were in break.
I bet it was. We'll have the C1 for you. That's Stan Weber. And again, I screwed it up when I first brought it up. Oklahoma State getting 7 points at Iowa State. Coach Barnett thought that Jake should take Oklahoma State. I mean, they're the number 8 team in the nation. They're undefeated. They're going to Iowa State, and they're getting a touchdown. But is this just a big setup, and then Iowa State kicks their ass?
Vegas always knows something.
What's the...
I don't know.
What am I missing?
When you see a line like that, that's what you ask yourself.
So then what are you thinking about doing right now?
It's going to depend on
how
loose I feel on Saturday morning.
I don't need to hear that at all, but which way are you leaning right now?
Taking the points. I mean, but the K-State game moved back down to the pick'em. So, yeah.
I'd take K-State, I think.
Right, no.
That's right.
I would parlay K-State and OSU.
Oh,
I think that's the move.
What would you do if you were a betting man, Nate? Would you take Oklahoma State and pocket 7 points, or do you feel so strongly about Iowa State having a great game, you'd be willing to give 7 points and take the Cyclones?
I think I'm going to take the points in Oklahoma State just because I think they are two relatively evenly matched teams, you know, so I'll take the team that's getting the points.
We'll find out what Gary Lezak would do after this on WHB.